Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
With Oscar winner and fashion icon, I do not use that word lightly, wow. Gwyneth Paltrow. Gwyneth, we're thrilled to have you here.
Thank you so much.
So tell us who you're wearing.
I'm wearing a Calvin Klein dress and Vuitton jewels.
Gorgeous, gorgeous.
Thank you.
And you are a red carpet pro. What would you say to the newbies out there?
I would say, especially on a night like tonight, not to go too far into the avant-garde.
I am on a drug. It's called Charlie Sheen. It's not available because if you try it once, you will die. Your face will melt off and your children will weep over your exploded body. Too much. I woke up and decided, you know, I've been kicked around. I've been criticized. I've been like the aw shucks guy with like this bitching rock star life. And I'm just finally going to completely embrace it, wrap both arms around it and love it violently and defend it violently through violent hatred.
That about summarizes the state of America today. A military that's standing down while the Middle East burns. A Navy that does nothing, 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 nothing. An incompetent president who parties every other night. A first lady who lectures you about eating carrots, and then she eats, you know what she serves there. Don't ask what she serves there. And then you got Farrakhan saying that the Mideast uprisings will come to the United States. Nation of Islam leader Minister Louis Farrakhan predicted on Sunday that America faces imminent uprisings that mirror those in the Middle East. In his speech, he said, what you're looking at in Tunisia and Egypt, Libya and Bahrain, what you see happening there, you'd better prepare because it'll be coming to your door, Farrakhan said in a booming voice, thousands of followers cheering in his wake. Farrakhan also called on President Barack Obama to allow protesters to march, urging the president not to attack innocent people when they do. That's a stunner. I don't know when he did. The controversial minister spoke to a packed house at the Allstate Arena in Rosemont as part of the 81st annual celebration of Savior's Day, which marks the birth of the faith's founder. The keynote address was entitled God Will Send Saviors, that capped a weekend of workshops focused on health, preparing for natural disasters, unidentified flying objects. The Nation of Islam, you see, believes in a UFO called the Wheel or the Mother Plane. You hear this? The Nation of Islam believes in a UFO called the Wheel or the Mother Plane. Farrakhan described a 1985 religious experience in which he ascended into a flying saucer and heard the voice of Elijah Muhammad predicting historical events that came to pass. For about 4 hours, Louis Farrakhan spoke and jumped from topic to topic, citing religious texts. He praised Scientology and his founder, L. Ron Hubbard. Hubris. Farrakhan extolled the virtues of Scientology and its auditing process, which is considered spiritual counseling by its members. Now listen to what he said. Here's what Farrakhan said. L. Ron Hubris, he said, is so exceedingly valuable to every Caucasian person on this earth, Farrakhan said. L. Ron Hubbard was and is trying to civilize white people and make them better human beings and take away from them their reactive minds. Isn't that nice? Isn't that calming? Isn't that terrific? Mr. Hubris recognized that his people have to be civilized, Farrakhan said to a wildly cheering crowd of black Muslims. And he's not banned from entering England. So L. Ron Hubbard was trying to civilize white people and make them better human beings and take away from them their reactive minds. He said that his people have to be civilized, meaning white people have to be civilized. No other people on earth need to be civilized, said this wonderful prize of humanity, Louis Farrakhan. See, what does he want to do? Topple our government? Threatening violence? Turn blacks against whites? Is that what he's trying to do? I don't know. What is he trying to do? I just got a letter today from a congressman on my behalf, Congressman Alan West, who I think can go all the way. We have a black president named Barack Obama, which shows that white people will vote outside of color lines if they think that the man is right for the job. They were hoodwinked, of course, by Soros and his money, in my estimation. And, of course, the Democrat socialists of America in the media. But nevertheless, America elected a black man, mainly through white liberals who were hoodwinked, and also through white middle-of-the-roaders who thought that they'd just do anything but another McCain. They all have voters' remorse. Alan West is an African-American who happens to be the real McCoy in the sense that he's a Iraq combat vet, retired as a lieutenant colonel, served his country, great man, and he just stepped up to the plate. And today, February 18, 2011, he wrote a letter to Hillary Clinton on behalf of Michael Savage, which is on my website, and I don't want to read you the whole story again. But he ends with this. He says, "For a nation who believes in the freedom of speech and press, I have a hard time understanding why such a high-level government department would release this statement about Michael Savage when there has not been one incident recorded in the United States regarding Dr. Savage instigating violence, let alone serious criminal acts." And he goes on to say, "Please do not let the United Kingdom's policy to be used as a model for other countries around the world. Please let our model of freedom of speech be the impetus of change around the world. Yours respectfully, Alan B. West, Member of Congress." Ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to the show, can I ask you to do something that's free? Can you go to michaelsavage.com and sign the petition? Because I need it by today or tomorrow at the latest. We have over 70,000 names. I'm amping up the campaign now. It's now or never. Everybody I speak to says, "Why do you care about getting your name off the list in England? What do you want to go to England for?" They all ask me. And I say, "Well, what do I want to go there for? Would you want your name to be associated with murderers and terrorists? Do they understand what it is to be defamed by a nation?" So anyway, sign the petition if you will. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's take your calls. Dave in Sacramento, you're up on the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Thanks for taking my call, Dr. Savage. In your opening monologue, I did have to agree with you on one point of what I actually agree with Gaddafi when he says that what we're seeing in the Middle East, or no, Farrakhan, I'm sorry, Farrakhan, what we're seeing in the Middle East will come here. And do you not think that's going to happen?
Agitators like him trying to stir.
Basically how I see it is,
I believe that with Farrakhan trying to stir up race hate, I believe that with the number of Hispanic gang members running around in America who the police won't touch, I believe so, there could be. Yes, I believe, you know, this is not easy for me to talk about, but yes, I believe it could happen. I believe that with the character we have in the White House, yes, it could happen here. Michael in Virginia, you're next up. Go ahead, please. What's your opinion?
I think that you're completely wrong about Mr. Farrakhan in terms of what he was saying. I think that you really have been misrepresenting his position in terms of the state of racism in America. And I think that you don't...
Wait, what do you mean? We have a black president and that's the state of racism in America? Whites voted for a black man and that it's still a racist nation?
Yeah, well, okay, you got one black president out of, what, 44?
Well, I understand, true. If all 400 members of Congress were black, then you'd feel better, is that it?
No, sir, it's not about that. And
what is it about?
Well, what I'm trying to say is I think that America has a race problem that it's never dealt with.
There's a hidden agenda, so you're a mind reader now.
No, it's not about...
Well, maybe you're projecting your own race problem. Did you ever think about that you're projecting your own racial enmity towards white people?
Okay, so now how am I being a racist against white people?
Well, you're just saying that the country is a racist country.
Well, okay, if you talk about anti-Semitism or what have you, and you say that, you know, Jews have been set upon by people who have a beef against people against the Jewish religion, that's not a problem. But when black...
Well, wait a minute, when have you heard me say that? I don't know where you're coming from.
Say that.
You're all over the map. You started by saying Louis Farrakhan is right, that white people are racist and need to be civilized. Isn't that what you're saying?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Well, please clarify what you're saying. Perhaps I misunderstood you.
Okay, Minister Farrakhan is correct in the sense when he speaks about the race issue in America and how America is going to have to deal with the mistreatment of black people.
America's going to have to deal with?
Yes, sir.
Is going to have to deal with?
Yes, sir.
How many years have we dealt with this problem in this country? Would you say ever since the Civil War?
No, actually, you never. America's never.
How many white men died freeing black slaves in America? Do you know how many white men died freeing the slaves in America?
There was no white men that died freeing slaves during the Civil War.
Oh, you mean no white men died in the Civil War from the Union side fighting against the South who held slaves?
No, what I'm saying is that the reason.
What you're saying is you don't know what the hell you're talking about, and every time you're confronted with reality, you change the discussion.
You don't know what
why don't you get on your hands and knees and thank God you live in the most advanced civilized nation on earth, and that no nation on earth is better than America.
Do you think
you would do better somewhere else? Do you think that another nation would welcome you? I don't know who you are, what you do, and do you think you would have a better opportunity in another nation? I'm asking you truthfully. I don't know you. You don't know me.
I don't know you and you don't know me, but what I'm trying to tell you is that we built this country. Now, where would this place
be? What do you mean, who's we? Who built this country?
As in black people, sir.
Black people built America?
Okay.
I was told that the Chinese people built the railroads in California. Everywhere I turn, I hear somebody else built America. So who actually built the country?
Okay. You know what? I don't want to argue with you and get to
Well, you call up and you say that there's a black problem in America, a race problem. And I ask you, you mean a black president isn't enough? And you say, well, it's only one elected official.
Okay, what I'm saying to you.
What is it that you would like to see happen for you to feel that the race problem is solved in America? Let me ask you that.
Okay, well, in order to solve the race problem in America, there needs to be 45 black presidents in a row. It needs to be
only 45. Why not 46?
No, well, 45, 46. There needs to be a Supreme Court that's completely black.
Oh, now I know you're just pulling my leg. Okay. You're having fun for, what is this, April Fool's Day?
No, sir.
All right. Have a nice day. Okay. All right. All right. The government meds didn't arrive today. It's the end of the month, you know. It's the 28th. It is the last day of the month. Let me check. Hold on. This happens every, ask anyone who knows the show. It's the 28th day of February. It's the last day of the month. And the government meds ran out. And this is what happens every time there hasn't been a new shipment. Okay, I'll be right back.
Savage.
We have a question from Twitter. We're very modern this year.
Okay.
If you could sing a duet with anyone in the world, who would it be?
Wow. Jay-Z.
Why Jay-Z?
Because I think
Oh, shut her up.
Get
this girl off my show. Gwyneth Paltrow lives in England because she hates America, you hear? Comes back for her awards. Did you watch the Oscars? I didn't watch them. I do watch them once in a while. I knew it would be, you know, the same boring stuff. Charlie Sheen is really a kick. I'll tell you, his publicist quit yesterday. He went on the airwaves. We played a little bit of it, and he claims he's cured his substance abuse with his own mind. And he says, listen to this. I'm tired of pretending like I'm not special, Sheen told NBC. I'm tired of pretending like I'm not a total freaking rock star from Mars. And people can't figure me out. They can't process me. I don't expect them to. You can't process me with a normal brain. He later said he has tiger blood and Adonis DNA. At the conclusion of the final interview given to TMZ, Sheen's publicist Stan Rosenfeld resigned. I wonder why. He says, oh, he can't work as a publicist. I guess he let him actually talk. And you actually saw the real face of Hollywood instead of the spokesmouths. He says, everybody thinks I should be like begging for my job back, he told NBC. Anyway, how does this happen? Is he on drugs, do you think? I think that this is a mark. Who knows what he is? How does a person get this way? They asked him the last time he used drugs. He says, don't remember, don't care, drug test, don't lie. And he said, I closed my eyes and made it so with the power of my mind. When he was asked how he cured himself of his addiction, he said, I had to unload 22 years of fiction and just decided I don't believe that anymore. When asked to elaborate on fiction, he said, the fiction of AA, that's Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a silly book written by a broken-down fool who was a plagiarist. Wow. He said he renamed his home Sober Valley Lodge during his rehabilitation, and we wouldn't allow AA to be a part of it. On whether he worries about his five children someday reading about his issues, Gene said, God, no. Talk about an education. He hopes his children do read about it, he said. Lead by example and teach your kids right from wrong, he said. And if my right and my wrong is a little bit different than everybody else's, then my kids are going to be a little bit different too. Ah, that's interesting. How does this end? Does anyone in the business tell me how this ends? Because I've spoken to addiction therapists who say it ends very badly. It ends very, very badly indeed. So, I mean, is it worth talking about? By one last note is that he's received support from friends, including Sean Penn. Well, do we have to say a word about that one? Sean Penn has not composed a cohesive paragraph in his entire adult life that wasn't written by somebody else. So that's why I don't really watch the Oscars. I can sense out there there's like Dullsville out there. Cameron in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
I believe Charlie Sheen, Doc.
You believe Charlie Sheen?
Charlie Sheen is Jeffersonian. In other words, he's saying he can cure himself. He also tells us that 95% of people wash out of AA in the first year. He's talking the truth. He's calling.
I see. He may be talking the truth. That's fine. He ends by saying he's going to conclude with violent hatred.
That's if you come after his family. He's and you're like him, and I'm like him.
Now you're making me like Charlie Sheen? How am I like him? I don't use drugs. Do you?
No, but if people come after your family, you're going to go after them violently.
Well, who came after his family? It's he who went after his family by screwing around and using drugs.
Well, that's behind him, he says, and I believe him.
Why do you believe him? Like, what reason?
Well, he's sounding to me...
Do you think he's a good actor? Let's start with that. What does he do for a living? He reads other people's lines, and he moves the way other people tell him to move. Does that make him special?
Savage.
You know what we're going to do? I can tell that you're distracted, you're bored, your mind is somewhere else. I can feel that. I could just have a sixth sense or I wouldn't have survived this long on radio. I'm going to do an open mic to mic day. Make believe it's Friday. Any topic is fair game. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. What topic is it that's grating you? What's bothering you? I really don't want to lead you. I want you to lead the show. And you have an opportunity right now to do so. And while you're doing it, we're going to recap last week's big story right here on the Savage Nation.
Tonight, we continue one of my favorite traditions here at the White House by celebrating the music that's at the heart of the American story. And as we come to the end of Black History Month, I can't think of a better way to do it than by honoring the legendary sound of Motown.
When we moved in to this house a couple of years ago, we wanted to open these doors as wide as we could. Especially for young people like you. And this music series is one of the ways that we're doing that. We have held workshops for all different types of music, classical, country.
You know, this is just like classical music. Let's get it on. Let's get it on. Getting down with Motown. Let's get it on. Classical music, just like Brahms, Beethoven, same kind of thing. Different strokes for different folks. Who didn't remember Let's Get It On? Remember that? It was a beautiful tune. It's 2011, man. You don't celebrate Motown while the world's burning. And we don't know what they're eating. That's what bothers me because I'm a foodie. So jealous that I'm not there eating those Detroit barbecued ribs. Look what we have at the White House. Getting down with Motown while the Middle East is burning. What's going on with this country? Now, don't even get me started on NASA. I spent a whole chapter on how Obama's destroying the U.S. military and NASA. You didn't believe me, except the 200,000 people who bought the book. The man gutted NASA. After the next shuttle mission, after this, there's two more. The shuttle is over. We're going to have to buy seats on Russian shuttles to get up to the space stations. Obama destroyed NASA. Do you understand that? He's weakened us in space. Do you have any ideas destroying our nuclear capacity, destroying our abilities to fight from space? He's weakened the Navy to the point that it won't rescue civilians in Libya. What has to happen till you figure out what's going on around you? You say, well, look, Mike, calm down. We threw 100 of the bums out. We threw 100 communists out in the last election. And what did you get? Tell me what you got. You got K Street back. You got the crybaby Boehner. You got the pink tie. The pink ties took over. So you threw out the reds and you got the pinkos. Where's the red, white, and blue O's? You got you went from the red O's to the reds to the pinkos. Where's the red, white, and blue now? Tell me where they are. You don't want to know the corruption level. It'll make you sick. Green Energy Investment Fund hires top Obama energy aide. Revolving door. Did you read this story? New Soros investment fund profiting off Obama's green energy push hires top Obama energy aide. In my day, they go to jail. My day, right in prison. Right in prison. Who's going to put him in prison, though? The same people who gave us the SEC under George Bush? They're going to put him in prison? The Democrats or the Republicans are going to imprison somebody? So, in other words, the corruption has never been at this level. Never in history. That's why you can see you got corruption and you got delusion in one. All in one. People's Republic of Obama celebrating Motown Day. That's what I'm going on. It's not that I care about Motown. I like Motown music in my day. It was like a background song. I always like, hey, Mr. Postman. Play Mr. Postman for me. That's when the postman delivered the mail, you know, by 3 o'clock. I get my mail at 5 now, 5:30. Smoke from the postal truck precedes the postal truck. Talk about carbon dioxide. So that's what they're celebrating now.
Well, that was last week's big story, the president celebrating Motown while the Middle East was burning. And, of course, there was another party today at the White House with another high-carb, high-calorie lunch so that the First Lady can get ready for a carrot stick dessert or something. You say, why are you harping on the First Lady? Shouldn't she be off limits? You can see the big things in the little things. You could see that, you know, the parable of the king has no clothes is being played out with these two imposters in the White House. That's what it's all about. It's a very sad time in America. We were all hoodwinked by George Soros and his money men. The Managed Funds Association, in my opinion, engineered the crash in order to have us panic and elect this green president, plain English. Green in many different ways, green mainly for the people who put him in office. Very green indeed. Sacramento, Matt, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Yes, Mike. You know, when I was a kid back in the late 70s there,
Let's start again. You know who in the 70s?
Sean Penn, Stevez, or Carlos is what Charlie Sheen as he's known now. They were uneducated.
Wait, hold on. You just said Sean Penn, then you said Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
Who is it you allege you know? Both of them or one of them?
Both of them. I used to go down vacation in the summertime. My cousins lived in Point Doom down in Malibu. I knew these guys.
What were they like as boys?
Exactly same they are right this very day. And Charlie Sheen was a drug addict then, and he's a drug addict now, and he's a high school dropout, and this is what you get.
We know Sean Penn is an illiterate high school dropout. That's why he won an Academy Award.
Anyway.
Why do you think he won an Academy Award? Because only someone who can fake it that well, meaning an actor, could win an Academy Award for acting. Any man who actually knows what he's talking about, it's very hard to be an actor if you're strong-willed and know what you're talking about. You literally have to have an empty head to be a good actor.
That's exactly right.
Think about that. It's not 100% true, because I have another friend in the movie business who said to me that one of the great acting coaches, I think it was, who was the guy who played Hiram Roth in The Godfather? Lee Strasberg said to him, that anybody with more than 110 IQ can be a good actor. In other words, it runs the other way as well. Anybody can act on one hand. On the other hand, it helps if you're stupid and you have no education. Let's put it to you that way.
Right. Well,
it's not a special skill, in other words. And, you know, it's the thing is this, is they're making they're destroying their own industry. That's the real problem. So how did you grow up? How did you get away from that behavior?
Well, no, I would just visit them. I grew up in Marin County. But, no,
Marin County, right, a no-drug place, right.
Yeah, no, it's just I grew up. Those guys obviously never did. I guess they never had to. I don't know. But no,
is that what it? No, this is an interesting discussion. Is it like they're like 15 years old forever?
Apparently, I mean, that's Charlie. The Charlie I see right now ranting and raving is the same guy I saw in 1977. So
you mean the guy who says he has Adonis genes, tiger blood?
He's crazy. He was crazy then.
Is that the kind of stuff that he would say to girls in bikinis on the beach, like the beach girls? He'd go up to them and say, "I got tiger blood. I got Adonis DNA."
I don't know. He was nuts. Martin Sheen. Martin Sheen is pretty nuts himself. So.
Oh yeah, the apple doesn't fall far from the seltzer bottle. That's a mixture of several different things we did. Hey, remember the thing I did years ago? Who was the guy in Hollywood who runs Hollywood Beowulf? What's his name? The character I invented. Does anyone remember? Scungili. Johnny Scungili. The interview with Johnny Scungili where he says the seltzer bottle. Remember that doesn't fall far from the truck and how they treated them in Hollywood? Remember that one? Do we have that one in the archives you could pull up for later for the entertainment value here? Since look, Monday is entertainment, restaurants, and food. You want me to start telling you about food? You're going to be bored if I tell you about the Indian restaurant I went to yesterday, if you'd like. But the cabbage I ate and what it did to my intestines. I mean, you want me to go down to that level, we can do that too. You want to really get slapstick, we can do that. I'll tell you what I wanted. I know you want to talk about entertainment today. It's interesting. I'm very into entertainment today. I watched something very intriguing on HBO the other night. I was scanning around. I don't know when it was. Saturday night, who knows. It was like a 30-minute piece by the actors in this horrendous, horrendous show called Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David, who was the Jewish equivalent of the black Step and Fetch It from the 1940s. Now, I told you this before. Step and Fetch It, which unto itself is it was the actor's name, his stage name, rather. And he imitated, he invented a servile black figure for the entertainment of horribly nauseating to watch. But the white people loved it because they wanted to believe black people were that kind of servile. Larry David is a Jewish man who, in my opinion, is the Jewish equivalent of Step and Fetch It. He enacts the worst stereotypes of Jewish people. And he does so to the detriment of the Jewish people, and he makes a lot of money at it. So, having given you the background of my opinion on this, there was a 30-minute show on HBO where each of the actors on Curb Your Enthusiasm was asked what their favorite episode was. And one after the other, you could see their eyes shifting as they made their statements. Their eyes moved in a strange way because they were lying. They were lost. Either they were reading a line that Larry wrote for them or someone else. And then Larry said his favorite episode was where he ripped the cross off a Christian character's neck and used it to nail up a picture. And he said, oh, the HBO executives gave me a hard time when they saw that. They were frightened. He said, but nothing happened. He said, nothing happened. I can pretty much do anything that I want, really. And I sat there watching this. Then the one who plays the dirty-mouthed woman, who was always using the worst vile vocabulary ever imagined, gets up and she says, you know, when you look back on the history of the sitcom, she said, when you think of Desi, I Love Lucy, or Sergeant Bilko, she said, this is a game changer, what we created. What we've done here has changed the nature of the sitcom. It'll never be the same. We're so much better. They all sounded like Charlie Sheen. The difference between I Love Lucy, for example, and Bilko, if you want to talk about entertainment, was that they didn't have to resort to filthy, dirty, derogatory language in order to attract the attention of the listener. They didn't have to go down to the level of overt anti-Christian racism to get a laugh. And they didn't have to stereotype Jews in the most Nazi-like way in order to get the audience to watch them. And let me tell you something else. I used my words very carefully. Because what Larry David does for the image of the Jewish man is not too far afield from what the propagandists did during the Third Reich. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me.
We all need relief. We need a couple hours of relief every day. We're all going to crack up from the stress of living under this incompetent administration. We don't know which way to turn. That's the truth. That's what it comes down to. Everybody wants a laugh. Everybody wants just a breather. Yesterday in the middle, like in the late afternoon, I go to a certain place. I'm not going to tell you where it is. And they have Latin dancing. So it's like, you know, Cuban style that I grew up on in New York. But thankfully, thank God, it's come to my home county. It's not late at night with the drug addicts. It's in the middle of the afternoon, which was more typical of how it used to be done and how it's done in Latin American countries. I don't understand is going to a dance club at 10 o'clock at night. Don't these people work? I don't understand it. Who can dance at 10 o'clock till 5 in the morning and go to work other than someone with a menial job? So I didn't go for years. So now this place, I heard a band last night. They're Ecuadorian. They were fantastic. All of the great pachanga, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I hung out there, so I don't know anybody there. I go up by myself and I hang out alone. And a guy comes up to me and he says, loves my show. And another guy comes up, he says, Mike, he's a musician. He said, I'm a retired Air Force officer, lieutenant colonel, blah, 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 love the show. And these guys are all into music and dancing. And some of these people are great dancers. So one word led to the other, and all of the guys started to tell each other that I was there. And then the owner, who's Italian, you know, really got into talking with me about his food, which is Tuscan, which is very strange, the combination, how good the food is, I mean. And he invited me to be, you're not going to believe this in a million years, right, where I'm coming from. He invited me to be a dance judge for next week at a Latin dance judge. I said, what do you mean? I know what I like. He said, no, I want you to judge the dance contest next week. I said, I don't know how to judge a dance contest. He said, please come here and be a judge next week at the dance contest. I said, all right, I'll be a judge next week at the dance contest. He says, whatever you want, I'll get you a bottle of Dom Perignon. I said, please don't buy me anything. I don't want anything. I come here to enjoy the music and basically be left alone. So that was, you know, was going on, blah, blah, blah. So a guy comes up to me, and he starts talking to me, and he said he fought in the war in Israel in 1967. He was a man, maybe. He must be in his 60s. I don't know how old he is. And he was on the front lines. And he said to me, he comes to a place like this to get away from the world for a couple of hours. He says, you know what? You gotta enjoy life while you can. You know, the old basic stuff we've all heard. I'm going back to the Charlie Sheen thing. In other words, enjoy yourself, have a good time, escape reality with the dance, with the music, with women, whatever, right? But a healthy person can do this and then go back to the reality of their life. An unhealthy person needs the suspension of reality 24/7. So let's say they go to the dance club. Well, then they need to get high. Then after they get through with the dance club, they need to stay high. Then they need to get up in the morning and be high again. Do you know what I'm saying? That's the difference between being able to live in reality and have some fun and not being able to live in reality and going for that fun. So there's an article attached to this. We're talking about people who are drug addicted or addicted on their own ego. And the article came out today. It says, pre-adulthood separates the men from the boys. And it's a long article. It says, once upon a time in America, boys became men when they went to war or started a family. And it said those milestones still hold true. But there's an article out, how the rise of women has turned men into boys. And they say too many young men today are stuck in a stage of extended adolescence. And they'd rather hang around home and choose video games or watch the Cartoon Network over adult responsibility. And he says there simply never has been this large a percentage of single young people with so few family responsibilities and lots of entertainment. And he's talking about what was going on in the old days. And he goes back to the 50s. He said in the 50s, most people completed the transition to adulthood, finishing school, finding their first job, marrying and having children by age 21 or so. But he says, but times have changed dramatically. And he says, my students today, they're going to live, if demographers are right, into their mid-90s. So they look at me and they say, no, wait, get married at age 20? I'm not sure I want to be married to the same person for 76 years. And they have a point. And he says, young single adulthood is a stage of development. It's not going away. So I'm going to ask you a question. because they're arguing that it's very hard right now to get a job. Listen to what they say. It's much harder to find your way into your first good job, says Heimowitz, and takes longer still to move to the next professional level. And then they say, in this new economy, young people will take much, much longer to grow up. Do you agree that that's the reason, because it's hard to find a job? I don't think that's the reason at all. When was it ever easy to find a job in America? When I graduated college, it was very hard to find a job. It was never easy. Nothing has ever been easy. You mean it was easier for your great-grandfather living somewhere in Europe with 5, 10 children or whatever they had over there, scratching a living out of the earth? It was easier for him? So it's all a lie. There's some other reason that boys won't become men. What is the reason that boys won't become men? Do you think it's because women have turned into men themselves? He's saying the rise of women has turned men into boys. We know that more women have college degrees. We know that more women are more aggressive than ever before. We know that women look like men, act like men, talk like men, have the morals of men. And so many men don't even want to get married. They don't go out with women. They don't want to get married. What's the point of getting married when they go out and meet someone and have a roll in the hay, so to speak, without getting married? Do you think it's because of women's liberation that men are staying as boys? Do you think it's because of the sexual revolution of the 60s? What exactly do you think is the reason so many men won't get married? Why do you think so many men remain boys, if you want to put it to you that way? Is an interesting question. I mean, you know, what is the reason? I'd like an answer from some of my audience. I think it's worth 5 minutes of our time. I'd like to hear what you have to say. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Is it because it's hard to get a job? You mean your great-grandfather had it easier in the home country? That's a lie. So what's the reason that so many young men refuse to get married and become a man and have children? What's the answer?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. We're bored of politics. We are absolutely not going to talk about the imposter. We're not going to talk about the Oscars. To me, it's one and the same. The presidency and Hollywood are about one and the same. I stumble on another topic, which I think is worth 5 minutes of our time, which is, why are boys refusing to get married? Why are boys refusing to become men? Why are so many boys stuck in boyhood? Why do so many guys in their 20s and 30s basically, why are they still like children? What's causing this? Is it that the aggressive nature of... Is it because of the aggressive nature of women? Is it because of the women's movement? Is it because for 30 years there's been propaganda that men are unnecessary? Why is this? Why are there so few men? And especially, by the way, this is a very difficult thing to point out, but it's a demographic reality. Caucasian men in particular are wimps. Young men. You don't see this as much amongst the Latino men. Many of the Latino men will get married young and have families. You don't see this as much amongst other races. You see it primarily amongst Caucasian men in the West. Why is it that they remain Boy Scouts instead of becoming Scoutmasters? Why are so many men, shall I say males, let's put it to you that way, stuck in boyhood? Why is it that they didn't do what probably you did if you're part of my generation, getting married relatively young, struggling, having children very young, basically killing yourself very young to have a family? Now, what motivated people of my generation to do that? I'm going to lay down a couple of ideas that I have, and then I'm going to ask you your ideas. For one, when I was a young man, I knew what was expected of me. There was no question. My parents, my relatives let me know very clearly that a male in our society should go to college, get a career, find a girl, pick one out of the chorus line, get married and have children, or else there were questions about you. There were questions about you in every way. Like, what's wrong with you that you can't get married? I mean, if you hit 30 and you weren't married already, forget about it. You know what I'm saying? You had to meet someone, get married, and have children. You say, well, that was the dark ages. Really? Hey, schmuck, I'd like to say to you, if it wasn't for guys like your father, you wouldn't be here. Think about what I just said to you. If it wasn't for the so-called dark ages, you wouldn't be here. If your father behaved the way you are, you wouldn't be here. Don't you understand that? So what exactly is going on in our society that so many white males are afraid to become men, in plain English? In plain English, that's all. What is doing it? What happened? Why are they so boy-like instead of men? What happened to this country? And there are many answers, by the way. There's not a single answer. So let's start with the callers. I've given you one little example. I think there are others. I mean, we could blame it on Hollywood. We could blame it on the women's movement. We could blame it on medication. We could blame it on the drinking water. We could blame it on a lot of things. And there's probably an element of truth in all of that. There are hormones in our foods that have feminized men, by the way. You say, oh, it's right-wing stuff. No, it's true. Well known. There are plastics that mimic hormones that are turning men into guppies. And that's been documented. But that's not the sole reason that a lot of men won't get married. They do date girls. They have a lot of sex. There's a lot of sex out there. And that has something to do with it, too. The women aren't holding it back anymore. They're like guys. I'm equal to a guy, so I'll have as many men as I want sexually. Oh, good, so that's why you're not married? Get back to me when you're 35, 40. Tell me what happens then. So what's doing this, that so many white males in particular are unwilling to become men? Ann Arbor, Michigan. Barry, we'll start with you. What's your opinion? How come so many white males are stuck in boyhood?
I'm going to hazard a guess, but I think from my experience, you hear in a white male community, I don't even want to say that, sorry. You hear what you should make when you take a job. And I think that's outdated.
What you're saying, you're saying the employment expectations are so high that people don't meet up to it and they feel inadequate?
And they hold out or they wait until they get that job that they think they should be getting.
And haven't they ever heard about starting at the bottom and working your way up?
No, I think many of them haven't.
I think that's a very big point. I think it's a very true point. I mean, I know it's true. A lot of young people have the idea that they are too good for menial jobs. Oh, I'm too good for retail, man. After I get home, there's nothing left. So I'll just stay home and sponge off Obamacare till I'm 27. Thanks for the call. So that's one. I mean, I got out of college. I wasn't particularly a good student. I didn't know where I was going. I had a few upsets along the way. I had to leave school for one semester. My father had a heart attack. I had help run the store. So I got out. I was sort of drifting around a little bit. I took a job as a social worker because it was a very low-level, entry-level job. I took the job because at least it was a job. I lived lower than some of the welfare recipients. I had no furniture. I've told you the story. I wasn't ashamed of myself. I knew that, you know, I'll do it for a while. But you know what happens after a while is you get ashamed of yourself. You see people living better. So you have two choices at that point. You could walk around with a chip on your shoulder and hate everybody, like the first caller who said there should be 45 black presidents before there'll be no more racial enmity. Or you could say, you know what, I want to better in my life, and I'm going to work harder. I went back to school. I continued. Then I got a job teaching, and I went to graduate school after teaching all day till 10 o'clock at night. I did that many nights a week. So I got a master, blah, blah, blah. I kept pushing myself, pushing. And the more I did, the more ambitious I became. That's the strangest thing. And the older I got, the more ambitious I became. Would you believe it? To this day, people say to me, why don't you retire? I said, there's no such word in my vocabulary. I don't know what the word means. Retire from what to what? I don't play golf, I don't play tennis, etc. There's no such thing as retire. It doesn't mean I'm not tired a lot of the times and exhausted from overwork. I've taken on too much. I mean, I'm writing a novel, I'm writing a nonfiction book, I'm doing five shows a week. It is a little too much. The biggest battle in my life that sucked me dry, it's almost killed me, is this battle in the UK. You wouldn't believe it. It's drained me. I hate to admit it. But the Liberals, in a way, have beaten me almost to the point of winning. I have to admit it to you. I have to look back over the last 2 years. I'd say the single biggest drain of my energy has been what the illegitimate former Prime Minister of England did to me, Gordon Brown, that corrupt sack of you-know-what, with his porno-making a Home Secretary, Jackie Smith. Incidentally, please go to michaelsavage.com and sign the petition to get my name off the list. It's perfectly free, and it'll be very important if we can break 100,000 names by the end of the week. Anyway, so what's your answer? Why are so many white males refusing to become men? Tim on WOR, what's your answer? Why?
Lack of accountability, Michael. Without a doubt, people nowadays feel as if they're not responsible and they don't have to worry about the outcome of what they do on a daily basis.
So wait, let me see if I follow that, because I don't quite, in my own mind, I'm so overly responsible, I don't even understand what you mean. You mean the young men don't want responsibility?
No, what I'm saying is they're not being held accountable for who they are and what they do and the difference between...
Oh, in other words, mommy or daddy doesn't say, why are you acting like a boy? Why don't you get married already and be a man?
Eureka. Men are not what they used to be. And I think the feminization thing is a valid point, and I think that the drugging and the rest of it are all important issues, but the accountability...
In other words, the way I was raised, good old shame and humiliation is no longer used in child rearing.
Well, absolutely.
It works. It's one of the best principles of child rearing that has ever been invented. You ask... You remember I did a show about 2 months ago on the Chinese mother who's so condemning of her children if they don't, you know, get super A's. Remember that? She said we shame our children. We yell at them. We call them names if they don't do well. That's the opposite of the white family today, isn't it?
Yep. And the nice thing about you is that you're not racist, nor am I. I have a background in psychology and sociology, and I, too, graduated from a very liberal state school, but not from California. I have since become very conservative in my ways. If you look at a black grandmother, for instance, they've basically taken over the role of what a black male should be doing as a father, and they'll do just what you're talking about. They'll do a wonderful job of putting, you know, a young black male in its place so that they know boundaries and so that they have healthy ways about them as opposed to running rampant and not knowing their way.
Interesting. Well, how about what you're about to hear? Listen to this. This is a little dinosaur-like, isn't it? Let's hear it.
Godfather, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do.
You can act like a man! What's the matter with you?
Break after.
Is this how you turn down a Hollywood Pinocchio that cries like a woman? What can I do? What can I do?
Savage.
This way. So we have a Hollywood guy named Charlie Sheen who's talking crazy talk. He says he has Adonis DNA, this and that. He cuddles up with his twin sons and both of his hooker girlfriends. He won't stop behaving like a 15-year-old Hollywood punk on drugs, which is not to say he's on drugs. He's behaving like a druggie. A 15-year-old kid, a punk kid, would behave this way, thinking that that's manly. That's the point I'm getting at. He actually thinks that makes him look manly, to be stoned and hang around with hookers. He thinks that's the image of a tough male. Now, he doesn't understand that the hardest act in the world is to be married and have children. Oh, no one said it's easy. Whoever said that was easy? I'll never forget the day I went into a restaurant. I first moved to California, North Beach. The guy is dead now. I don't remember that. I don't want to talk. And he had a placemat that with his own sayings on it, the old school Italian sayings. And he said, anybody can do the easy thing. A man does the hard thing, that kind of thing. And I liked the guy. We got along very good because I was raised that way. Who said raising a family is supposed to be easy? Who said that having a relationship is supposed to be easy? Who said that? Where is it written? Where'd you get that idea? And we're trying to get to the reason why mainly white males remain boys so long, why they won't get married, why they won't have children. You can't entirely blame them. Take a look at the women out there. You know, I could go into this whole story, and there's no point, because then you'll accuse me of misogyny, which is as far from the truth as you could possibly get. The woman's movement, no doubt, destroyed the whole concept of family in the Western world. Now you say, well, it's too bad. Women didn't want to be broodmares. They didn't want to just be staying at home while a guy went out and had a good time and, you know, had a career and she stayed home. I understand all of that. But now take a look at where we are today. Take a look at the demographics of America, and you'll understand what I'm talking about. And you'll come to ask yourself, is this the direction you want the country to go in? Because that's the way it's going. And do you want to turn it around? Can you turn it around? What caused it? Why are so many white males remaining boys so long? Why don't they become men? Ethan in New York, you're on the Savage Nation. Give us your opinion.
I'm 26. I got a master's. I've been looking for a teaching job for the past 3 years, and I can't get married unless I'm financially stable enough. It's what I was raised.
Ethan, you said you're looking for a teaching job. You can't even get a teaching job?
Well, social studies is hard to find, especially...
No, I understand. But I'm going to ask you a tough question. Are they hiring minorities but not white males, or are you a minority?
To be honest, I haven't really seen that. I found that if anything, they're just not hiring anyone that's my age group.
Okay, because for a long while it was white males need not apply, particularly to civil service jobs. They put everybody ahead of the white male, but you're saying that's not the reason at all. There's no jobs at all.
No, I think that they.
But Ethan, would you, if you had a decent starting job, do you think you'd look to get married anyway?
Yeah, like I said, but I don't want to get
it. But hold it. Let's take the other side. What's in marriage? What would you want out of a marriage?
Kids, probably number one, eventually.
Kids. So you have the instinct to want to be a father.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, is that still do guys still have that desire to raise children? I do see a lot of men playing with their children. They seem to enjoy themselves. I do see it. I look around. I'm not blind. But I wonder how strong an impulse that is amongst men today. Where do you get the idea? Where does a young man get the idea that being a father is a super thing to be? Being a husband is a great thing to be? Where does he get the idea? Where is he supposed to get it from? If the churches don't reinforce it, if the synagogues don't reinforce the concept of being a father or a man, where are they supposed to get it from? Hollywood? From who? Have you ever seen who writes the scripts, who acts in them? They're not reinforcing the concept of a family. When have you last heard someone extolling, he's a family man? You know, when I was young, I would listen to the parents, directly or indirectly. I'd hear them talking, and I hear them would talk. Well, it's a different world altogether. First of all, there were parents in the house. That's number one. Number two, there were relatives who were in the neighborhood who came over, and friends of the family who came over. Every night there was somebody in the house having coffee and cake, and they would talk. And as a young guy, who listened? I listened from another room, or I was doing my own thing, but you overheard. And you picked up a lot through the wall, so to speak. But they would always talk about various actors even sometimes, and they would say things like, oh, well, he's a family man. But they would say it with respect if they were referring to a particular actor or entertainer. They looked up to somebody who was a family man as opposed to a runaround guy, you know what I mean, that kind of thing. So as a young guy, you get the idea that getting married and having children is a respectful thing to do. Now let's compare that to today. When have you last seen a movie that extols the image of a young man struggling to get his first job, to meet a decent girl, to have a child, and to raise the child, whether you begin in your parents' house, doesn't matter. That was a European tradition for centuries, where the family would, the next generation stayed in the same house. There was nothing wrong with that. There's nothing new under the sun. No one says you have to have a separate apartment every time, you know, each generation. Stay in the same house. There's room for you. I'm sure the parents would probably like it if you don't have the money. It still goes on in most of the world. So what I'm getting at is it's not about the housing. There's something else going on here. And I don't quite know exactly what it is. Do you have an idea on this? I'd like to know what it is. The phone number is, well, you know the phone number.
Savage.
I wonder who
wrote the book of love.
Tell me, who wrote the book of love? I've got to know the
So it's the day after the big Hollywood bash, and we're laughing at them, High School of Performing Arts, who don't know what to do to get our attention, wearing stupid dresses by Hitler lovers, in the case of Nicole Kidman, who stands by John Galliano, the Nazi lover, in a Christian Dior dress. And then you see the other fools, you know, making an idiot of themselves. The next day, they're probably in therapy. And the question is, okay, so it's over. You can only bash Hollywood so much. We know that what it is. It's, you know, it is what it is. It's a big industry. We all enjoy entertainment. And so let it go at that. And as role models, what are they telling our children? And does that partially explain why, in particular, white males are remaining boys for so long, is what we're talking about. You can't blame it all on Hollywood. You can blame it on birth control pills. You can blame it on the women's movement. You can blame it on Hollywood. You can blame it on the death of the church as a role model. You can blame it on the single-parent household with his little father, few fathers around. You can blame it on a lot of things. It's a multifactorial problem. I don't think we're going to solve it just by talking about it, but I'm asking the question. How is it that in my generation, I'll tell you, almost every guy I knew, everyone I knew was married in their 20s, got married and had a child, except one guy who was oriented another way. He happened to die very young of a drug overdose, by the way. But everybody else got married, had children. Why? They were required to, expected to, did so. You say, oh, well, they were miserable. They were unhappy. Well, don't be so sure, number one. And on the other side, you're telling me that young guys today are so happy because they're not married? You're telling me happiness exists in not getting married? Happiness is having nobody at home? Happiness is having to go out every night and looking for somebody like an animal walking in the streets, stalking, walking around in the gutter looking for somebody like a mate, like a dog, every night walking around? That's happiness? So tell me, why is this happening, particularly to the white male? As I say to you, it is particularly a product of the white male today in the West. You don't see this in most Asian nations. You don't see it in African nations. You see it in primarily in so-called affluent white communities. Why is it happening? Does anyone have an answer? Well, we have all these answers. We've covered it. And I'd like to know what you think about this. So let's go to the callers and see what they think around America. New York, Sandy, go ahead, please, your opinion.
Dr. Savage, I'm truly honored. I think there are many contributing factors, the pesticides in the water, turning the hormones more female. But I think two main reasons. First of all, yes, there are a lot of single women raising boys, and I don't think a woman can raise a boy to become a man. I think a man needs to be there. Not only that, it's not politically correct to be a man. I think that...
So you're saying young guys are afraid to act like men? They're afraid that they'll be ostracized if they act gruff?
I don't think it's socially acceptable anymore, and I think that it's been a long range...
You mean because the roles have been reversed? Women are allowed to act like men, and men are acting like women?
Well, I think we've opened the gap we've opened the door to a lot of different behaviors, but I think that, I don't know, it's been sort of like a strategic movement. You know, in the 60s, men were running to Canada, they weren't holding up their end of the familial bargain, women are attracted to strong men, at least I think so, and that's sort
of... Well,
when
you say strong men, do you mean men with money? I got you there.
Well, I can't deny that, but I think even if you watch birds, it's the male. He makes the best nest. He cleans it out. The one who seems like the safer bet is the one the female.
You know, I once had an old Russian rabbi talk to me when I was young. You know what he said to me from the old school? He said to me, he was joking with the words. He didn't speak very good English, and he said the word husband means house band.
I said, what
do you mean? He said, house band. He puts a band around the house, and he holds it together. I thought that was a beautiful statement, by the way.
Well, not only that, but you take the male equation out, you factor that out. Men protect their realm. Now, if you're saying that men are not important, who do we have to protect our realm? However small, it could be just five kids and a wife in a small home. But I think that men look at the world so much differently than women do, and we can't get them confused. And it's just
Are you saying that men have become cowardly?
No, I see. I think
does that summarize it all in a nutshell? If we were writing this in simplistic terms, would we say that the white male has abrogated his responsibilities to become a husband and a father because he's become cowardly?
I don't think it's cowardly. I think he's kind of giving up.
Giving up? That's interesting. That is a distinction, isn't it?
What?
He's giving up. Why? Because he can't do it. He can't cop to it. He can't do that role.
No, I think every place he goes, look at TV, they make the man look like an idiot. The only one who knows anything at home is the woman. And every place
Yeah, the TV ads are horrible, but most TV ads, the ad industry is run by guys like Galliano, the designer. Okay, they're all about the same. The mentality is the same, and that's why they denigrate the male. I understand that. But by the way, they don't just target the white male. I've seen them do this, by the way, recently to the black male in ads, too. It's disgusting. Every male, whether it of any race, is denigrated in ads, turned into some kind of schlemiel, non-human, like a weakling. The lawnmower falls out of his hand. He sets the barbecue on fire. He falls over, and mommy has to come save him, right?
Yes. Yes. It's like the mother is the only one who knows what's going on. And I think, you know, as a young boy...
So in other words, if you want to put it in that bigger context, it is the women's movement who has tried to make the male irrelevant. They have made the male irrelevant. They want the matriarchy to run America on some principal idea that the matriarchy is somehow better than the patriarchy, and a matriarchy will save America. Well, how did that work out? Just take a look at the White House. Take a look at Hillary Clinton. How's that worked out with the matriarchy in power?
Michael, did you
How's
ever...
that worked out with Michelle Obama in the White House running everything? And by the way, it's alleged on the inside that the advisors to the president are his wife and his mother-in-law, that they're really running the country. How's that worked out for the country?
Yeah, it looks good, huh? Did you ever look at that study that they did on elephants? I know it's ridiculous. It sounds stupid, but male elephants, they were so worried about all these poachers getting all the elephants, they decided to move a whole bunch of them out. But they didn't have the tools to get the big buck males out. They didn't have the machinery to get them out. So they got females and young. What started to happen over a year or so was that the males began to form gangs and beat up the other females, things that in the elephant community.
Wow, you're kidding. You mean once the elephant family structure broke down, they became kind of wild?
It got so bad that the young female elephants were being raped rather than joining into family relationships with the other young males. But what they some smart scientist, and I wish I remember his name.
Whoa, this is some story. Wow.
Good. Anyway, what he said, well, you know, maybe we need to bring back the bulls. By this time, all the young male elephants were just, they ran the river. Nobody can go and drink without their permission. They ran in gangs. They were just terrible. They were beating up the other animals around. Anyway, they finally got large enough machinery and tools to get the huge bull males there.
And
okay, so one day, these bull males are just, you know, nonchalant, maybe only four of them, nonchalantly going down to the watering hole. And they're going
to... You're starting to sound like Janet Napolitano now.
No, listen.
No, I don't mean the elephant analogy. I mean your voice suddenly shifted into Big Sis. So go on. What's the end of the story?
Okay, the interesting thing is that now nobody got in his way. These young guys just moved aside, and they took testosterone levels. Do you know that prior to those bull male elephants going there, that the T levels on these young boys was through the roof? Once
yeah.
the older males began, you know, asserting themselves just by the very way they were walking. They didn't
yes.
have to do anything.
Right.
The T levels, the testosterone levels in these young males started to go way down.
You're kidding. That's an amazing story. I mean, this is a hell of a study. Heck of a study.
Well, see, you speak my
language. Sandy, are you a scientist? What do you do?
Oh, I'm a registered nurse. But my mind is in other places.
Yeah, this is a heck of a story about elephants. You know that that's a weakness of mine, elephants.
There's so many things, you know, and I know about the pesticides turning, you know, well, causing the body to produce female
hormones. Yes, that's right. Some of the plastics in our food and water supply in the environment mimic estrogenic compounds. There's no question about it. That's not mythology. Also, the high level of soy that's being that's been introduced into the American diet is completely unnatural for this population, incidentally, and it's also feminized men. Do you know that? Soy-based products also mimic estrogenic-like compounds.
I know. But you know what I found out? Is it's almost impossible.
Well, no, let's go into diet for a minute. It's something I'm an expert in. Do you know how many young boys have been raised for 20 years on low-fat, no-fat diets? No meat, low-fat, no-fat diets? Have you any idea what that does to a child?
Right. Without fat, you can't absorb. You can only do vitamin C and B complex. You know, they're water soluble.
The boys are nutritionally deficient. They're deprived of hormone building blocks, and so they're not developing into full male. So I really have not even talked about the nutritional component of this extended childhood, so to speak, or extended boyhood. I appreciate your call very much. 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass.
Well, we stumbled on an interesting topic, which is the extended boyhood of the white male, particularly in Western nations. It's a unique change in the social evolution of mankind, and I'm sure it's been touched upon by sociologists, and this is, of course, AM Talk Radio, but I think it's an interesting question because of the kind of leadership we have in America. Would you say he's a strong leader? No, nobody would say that. Everyone calls him a wimp. Would you say he's acting like a strong male in the past would have acted? Absolutely not. In many ways, we have a president who's acting like a teenager, strangely enough. Now, I want to read an article that's related to the last call, Elephants and Teenagers. I'll summarize. It's very much along the lines of what the nurse just said. Something familiar happened, eerily familiar happened in Africa recently. Adult elephants were taken away and the orphan youngsters were left to fend for themselves. The youngsters started the path to sexual maturity. The young boy elephants were going into lengthy musts, as a dog would go into heat much longer than a normal elephant in a normal setting. The boys ganged together. They started raping and killing white rhinos, an endangered species. They were displaying extreme aggression. The park authorities were very concerned. Someone had the idea to bring in 10 adult bulls to straighten out the gang of elephant thugs. Sure enough, the mature male elephants put the band of so-called delinquent juveniles in their place. The adults were reintroduced and life turned back to normal. No more killings. The elephants and rhinos were at peace again. Obviously, strong male and female presences are needed in these elephants' lives. The young elephants needed the adults from when they were defenseless babies through the time they were in their elephant teenage years. In the meantime, over in the United States of America, there was another gang-related murder in your city. Another fatherless, semi- or fully orphaned teenager shot a man and then reported back to his or her gang of delinquent juveniles. Perhaps we should take a lesson from the elephants. Very well written. Summarizes it quite well. And what's the answer to this question? I don't have an instant answer. The government's not going to say, well, what's the answer? There's no single answer. Discussing it is the beginning of an answer. Talking about it, it makes thoughts. You know, I once compared talk radio when I got started 16, 17 years ago. God, March 21st will be how long? 1994, whatever, 17 years already. It's my fifth career in my life. This is not my first career. I had many other successful careers. This has been my most successful, and maybe there'll be another one after this. I don't know what it'll be, but I'm not giving up so fast. But anyway, when I first started, I compared talk radio to throwing a stone into a calm pond and watching the rivulets that emanate from that stone in the calm pond. In other words, I throw ideas out, then you call in, and we reverberate back and forth, and these ideas spread through society. This is a form of influencing society. Talk radio at its best is a way of influencing society. But when you think about it, movies are far more influential than talk radio. Look at what it's done to America. Again, I want to go back to an image I remember. In the 1980s, my children were very young. I remember going to the movies. Every movie poster, without exception, in the early 1980s, showed a Hollywood starlet or a Hollywood actor with a pistol in his hand. all the white actors held a gun in their hand, all the anti-gun advocates. Every movie poster, or almost every, a handgun in their hand with a tough look, with their hands crossed, with their legs, you know, tough guys. And every one of them had a pistol in their hand. I got so incensed by this. Of course, I didn't have a radio show at the time to sound off with, but I do now. And I'm going to say that Hollywood's had a huge influence on the destruction of our society in this way. I mean, we know about every other way, but we know about the degradation of the morality of America. Tie it right to Hollywood. Go down the list. Tell me a positive thing Hollywood's done in their imagery. Tell me one positive thing Hollywood's done in the last 20 years. Tell me one positive thing other than entertain us. And don't get me wrong, I watch movies at night. I enjoy them. But I'm a grown male. I can watch a movie without being influenced by them. I watch it for various reasons or for pure entertainment. Although, admittedly, in my own tastes, I'm more interested in military history and history channels more than I am in anything else. But nevertheless, can you name one positive thing? I'd like to hear one positive thing without challenging you. One positive societal thing that's been done by Hollywood in the last 20 years. We're doing this the day after the Oscars, okay? They give themselves awards. They pat themselves on the back. They wear dresses designed by Nazis and Hitler lovers. We don't even mock them for that. Most of these girls, you look at them, they're innocent kids, by the way. You listen to them, they're just children. You're not mad at them. They're children. Guys like Charlie Sheen, you could be mad at because he should know better. But the girls are just girls. What do you expect a girl to do? She went to the High School of Performing Arts and she acted models. Can you name one positive male role model in Hollywood? Name one. Name somebody who acts like a man the way you'd like expect a man to behave. Let's take some of the top lead bull elephant male actors, okay? Let's put in that context. Name one. I can't think of one. I think of George Clooney as a more mature actor, yet every one of his roles is that of a druggie or a sexy guy who's just on the prowl. I don't think he's married, is he? I think he said last week he couldn't run for office because he's had sex with too many women, he's used too many drugs. He said that's just a fact. But every one of the roles he's in is that of sort of a that type of personality. And, of course, tied in with the social agenda. Naturally, of course, if you use drugs and sex, you've got to be a leftist and a progressive. But the point is, I cannot think of one white male actor who portrays that of the bull elephant in our society, so to speak, in a more broad term, right? Make believe we're in a classroom. We're just talking about this. Can anyone help me with this one? Virtually every male actor is in some way in great deficit in this area. I don't know if one script that's written that could get produced by the folks who run Hollywood. I wish I had the time to play Scungili for you. Boy, that was a good piece, but maybe tomorrow. But what do you think the reason is? Now, it has a lot to do with the women, birth control, has a lot to do with the sex, the freely available sex that the women themselves just want to have fun. No question about it. You can blame them. I know you blame them if you want. One person I respect sent this email, said why. Two things happened, vanity and selfishness, foolishness. With birth control and abortion at will, women have ultimate freedom to choose. Girls just want to have fun and they don't want to ruin their bodies. Now men are more nurturing than women. That's an email I just got. We haven't even touched on the birth control and abortion, because that's a hot topic, but it is directly related to what we are talking about. With birth control and abortion at will, women have ultimate freedom to choose. So in other words, maybe 30, 40 years ago, a woman would have had a baby by accident, but she wouldn't have been so quick to abort the baby. And if she would have gotten pregnant, she would have gotten married because she was pregnant. What's wrong with that? It's been going on since the beginning of time. And take a look at what's happened now with all this freedom. Better society? I don't think so.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now listen up.
time to play. He'll come with me. I'll be to my side.
You know, the death of the West was predicted by Otto Spengler over 100 years ago. It doesn't take any more than Barack Obama and Cameron of England to tell us that Otto Spengler was 100% right. Have you ever seen anything like this? No foreign policy, afraid of pirates and runabouts when we have the most powerful military on earth. I could go on and on. No one's getting tough on Gaddafi. The Middle East is burning. The U.S. is doing nothing. The U.S. couldn't even evacuate its citizens in the right manner. It's astounding. And what do we do here in America? Oscars. Oscars. We have Democrat congressmen putting on tiger uniforms. We have Oscars. We have an inexperienced, timid president. Timid, that is, with dictators, not timid with American patriots. It's astounding. Now Obama's offering states flexibility on health care law. He says that in public. In private, he tells liberals that his move will allow states to enact even more expensive reform. He's a liar. He's a total, incompetent, devious, communist liar. If we had a real opposition party, he would be impeached. I can name five things he could be impeached for. But what's the point? Who's going to listen to me? This is the Savage Nation. It is Blue Monday. And I have a congressman that I do believe in. I'll tell you why. Because he went to bat for me. His name is Congressman Alan West. You know him. A military veteran, a real Iraq war veteran, retired as a lieutenant colonel. He did the right thing in Iraq and was almost sent to jail for 8 years for doing it. He wrote a letter today to the so-called Honorable Hillary Rodham Clinton, Secretary of so-called State. And here's what he wrote. Dear Madam Secretary, I'm writing to you on behalf of Dr. Michael Savage, an American conservative talk show host, who has been banned from entering the United Kingdom. I respectfully request that the Department of State review this matter. And remember, this is dated today. He wrote that Dr. Savage has been included on a list which also contains the names of Russian skinheads who were imprisoned for murdering 10 immigrants and a Hamas terrorist who executed two Jewish parents and who brutally murdered their 4-year-old daughter. Dr. Savage, who has never called for nor directly instigated violence in any way, does not deserve to be on any list that involves such blatant acts of atrocity committed by such ruthless criminals. The United Kingdom's Home Office described Dr. Savage in the most heinous way. Alan West goes on. He says, for a nation who believes in the freedom of speech and press, I have a hard time understanding why such a high-level government department would release this statement when there has not been one incident recorded in the United States regarding Dr. Savage instigating violence, let alone serious criminal acts. Dr. Savage hosts one of the most popular talk shows in the United States of America. Madam Secretary, please do not let the United Kingdom's policy be used as a model for other countries around the world. Please let our model of freedom of speech be the impetus of change around the world. He concludes, he said, so far I understand that over 70,000 people have signed a petition demanding his removal from this list of murderers and terrorists. I look forward to your response on this important issue. Respectfully yours, Alan B. West, Member of Congress. So there is one congressman who went to bat for me. Last year we had Congressman Culberson. And I'm going to ask you, my listeners, to do the following. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com right now and put your name on my mailing list of those of you who'd like to see Hillary Clinton intervene on my behalf. It costs you nothing. 70,000 people are on the list. Won't you add your name to the list? It costs you absolutely nothing to do so. It's on michaelsavage.com. And speaking of the United Kingdom's Prime Minister, he stepped in on Libya today. Oh, yes. He stepped in on Libya. Cameron has proposed a no-fly zone to protect Libyan people from attacks by Gaddafi loyalists. Well, at least that's something, Beowulf, you know. What does a no-fly zone mean? That they're going to put up fly paper? They're going to catch flies?
Or they're caught with their flies down, more like.
What airplanes is he going to use? The airplanes that they just eliminated in England?
Yeah, maybe the Spitfires. And the
what plane? Would they have Spitfires left from World War II?
That's about the size of it, probably. They're not going to do anything. They're tied into the oil money, just like on the Al-Megrahi thing.
Yeah, there you go. Cameron proposes no-fly zone. I guess he's going to introduce flypaper. Here are some questions for the Savage Nation. Now that two members of Congress have demanded that the State Department take action to remove my name, Michael Savage, from the banned list in the U.K., will Secretary of State Hillary Clinton make any public acknowledgement of the situation? Will any other members of Congress follow Congressman West and Congressman Culberson's lead? Who will this be? Can this situation be ignored in the wake of the massive number of Tea Party members being elected to Congress? Would you get your friends to sign on to the petition on michaelsavage.com if they haven't already? Please have them do it by tomorrow. But why do you think it's important to get my name off this list? That's a great question, by the way, Beowulf, for today. It really is worth bringing up that question.
Yeah, yeah. What's free speech all about? What does it really mean?
No business like show business, like no business I know. Let's take a look at what's going on at michaelsavage.com. I found some stories you may be interested in. I think there's a good one up on the top left, Untested and Unready. It's by Michael Walsh, and he's talking about both Obama and Hillary Clinton. It's unbelievable to me what this country has fallen to. On the top right, there's a letter from Congressman Alan West that came out today where he appeals to Hillary Clinton to address the UK's ban of Savage. That's right. He stepped in for me. By the way, I think Alan West can go all the way. You know, we have a black president. There's no reason we can't have a real black president. When I say a real one, I mean a real conservative American war veteran, as opposed to a communist Marxist imposter. I think Alan West could go all the way, frankly. Would you please look at the emergency plea from Michael Savage, where I say I'm still banned in Britain? All you need to do is sign it. FBI files say Ted Kennedy rented a brothel and sought to meet communists. In each country he visited, he was also said to have insisted on interviewing the angry young men of the country, as well as communists. Why? Why would Kennedy want to know communists? San Francisco earns its name. It's a great article by Joseph Farah, and he said the citywide mental institution we call San Francisco is now considering a ballot proposition that would ban doctors and mudholes from performing infant circumcisions. Can you believe this is a city like this? Joe Farah's article is really worth looking at. It's very logical. Of course, you know. He said, how could this be crazy? This is a city that pioneered extending medical benefits to cover sex change operations. He said, so San Francisco could become the first city to subsidize sex change operations and ban circumcision? How do you like that, Beowulf? You like that?
It seems a little biased, doesn't it?
Also on the bottom of michaelsavage.com, I won't... Oh, there's so many wonderful links up there today. Madoff calls victims greedy. He says, I'm a good person. He also said that the entire nation is a Ponzi scheme. Inside Gaddafi's mountain lair, if you'd like to see what it looks like, puts Hitler's lair to shame. That's right. French Alps, not just for skiing anymore. Wow, would I like to be there. Grenoble, anyone? Top Dior designer attacks a woman, calls her Jew whore. I hate to even say the words. Take a look at this doll with the mustache. The other articles that you should look at. UN appeals to Hollywood for more global warming propaganda. Ban Ki-moon went to L.A. during Oscar week, telling all of them to make global warming a hot issue at the Oscars. Can you imagine this?
Getting their marching orders.
Don't miss this one. Mrs. Obama served governors a 2,200-calorie meal. The White House bash pulled few punches on the fattening front despite her profile as the leader of a national crusade to trim the waistlines of the country's youth. You won't believe the menu. All this and more on michaelsavage.com.
Savage.
So how do you feel about the People's Republic of Obama and the two leaders of the People's Republic of Obama flying around in Air Force One while the Middle East is on fire, celebrating Black History Month with Motown Night? How do you feel about the fact that China evacuated 4,500 of its own citizens using airplanes while the U.S. Navy is not being used, nor the U.S. Air Force, to evacuate American citizens? How is it possible that this could be going on while the Middle East is burning? Well, you know the answer, because if it's incompetence or something worse, I pray I'm wrong. But imagine if G.W. Bush, at the peak of the Iraq war, hosting a Christian music festival at the White House. Do you imagine what the vermin in the media would have said? Can you imagine what the slime, the Philistines in the New York Times would have said? Can you imagine what the Philistines and the Associated Press would have said
if G.W. Bush would have hosted a Christian music festival at the peak of the Iraq War, what would the Philistines have said on ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN? That's the question. Of course, there's no answer to the question because it didn't happen. And therefore, we are stuck with what we are stuck with because we don't have a true democracy. We have a sick system broken down the middle by special interests. Everything that was good about America now being decimated by the man with a wrecking ball, Obama the Destroyer. As I described him in Trickle Up Poverty, the raging bestseller, I said he is like a child who takes apart a fine watch and then can't put it back together again. Remember that, those of you who read my book, Trickle Up Poverty, Stopping Obama's Attack on Our Borders, Economy, and Security? Remember that important book? Well, it's an important book for many different reasons. President Obama, I wrote, is like a destructive child who takes apart a priceless watch that was carefully passed down to him. Without regard for the value of what he holds, he recklessly scatters the pieces on the floor and then can't put them back together again. Failing to learn from his mistakes, this destructive child moves on to another room where he finds another watch to take apart. Once again, he cannot put the pieces back together. That doesn't stop him from tearing apart yet another costly timepiece until all that's left are the pieces of discarded functionist watches lying at his feet. What's worse is that nobody steps in to stop him before he destroys again. I've been watching in stunned amazement as Obama the Destroyer systematically takes apart America, piece by piece, while the complicit fifth-column government media complex and the lapdog political leaders remain silent. Barack Hussein Obama is tearing down everything that was built before this man was even born. Look no further than the fundamental requirement to preserve America's borders and national security, and I go on from there. And 110,000 words later, and 350-some-odd pages later, you have the most brilliant book of the last several years called Trickle Up Poverty. This book will be a cherished collector's item in years to come. That is assuming that we overturn the dictator. That is assuming that the Democrats step in and remove him from office before his term is up, which could happen. We might still have a chance to hold on to this country. If they don't do it, the chances are that all will be lost. That's my personal opinion. I believe that the man is so emboldened by his own hubris that he's going to be not impeached. I believe there could be some other kind of move from within his own party, maybe on a medical. I don't know what. Remember, these are powerful people in this country, and they put this guy in there, and he's out of control. That's really what's going on here. They never see it happens with all people that they use as a puppet. Eventually, the puppet wants to control the puppet master, and that's when the fun begins. We don't know what's really going on between the puppet and the puppet masters yet, but something's going on. Something's wrong. Now, you got Americans. I think they're still stranded in Libya, and the U.S. Navy has not been sent in. They're busy giving diversity training to the crews, teaching them how to get along with each other. Birthing clinics are being established in the U.S. Navy ships right now. Women are being put on submarines, taking out the torpedoes to put in women's toilets. That's the U.S. Navy now. It's incapable of firing a shot, and it's incapable of even rescuing civilians. That's the U.S. Navy under Admiral Mullen. There's Admiral Mullen here. Don't I look good in this usher's uniform? Yeah. What a Navy. What a Navy, the new Navy. How is it possible that Chinese ships brave churning seas to whisk some 4,500 Chinese workers away from strife-torn Libya to the island of Crete, while the American Navy refused to send even a ship or an airplane, and Americans are trapped? Planes are coming in, military planes from Europe, ships, take out stranded workers, tourists, whatever, and Obama's partying on at the White House. What has happened to this great U.S. Navy of ours? I don't have an answer for this anymore. How did this happen that the U.S. Navy will not fire a shot in anger? Remember, just last week, four American tourists were killed by the pimp pirates. And now you have the Navy even unable to conduct a humanitarian mission. How has it happened that we have a crippled military under Obama? How is it possible? Something's wrong with this picture. They can't fire a shot in anger, and they can't even conduct a humanitarian mission. How is it that Chinese ships can brave churning seas to whisk away 4,500 Chinese workers, while the new liberal Navy under Commander Obama will not even enter the port of Tripoli a little up the coast to get the Americans out of there?
Remember, we had a U.S. Navy that landed in Normandy during high seas. Remember that? We had a Navy that landed in high seas off Palau and other places. Now we have a Navy that doesn't want to get their shoes wet. I mean, we have men in the Navy who would do this. The most brave men on earth. They fly helicopters in storms. But when you don't have a commander in chief, instead you have a party animal, a socialist party animal. That's what you have. You have a socialist party animal in the White House, the People's Republic of Obama. Air Force One, from Camelot to Bamelot in one generation. Now look at the White House. Now let's go all the way up the food chain and look what we have. Getting down with Motown while the Middle East is burning. U.S. Navy afraid to go into churning waters to rescue American civilians. The Turks got ships in there. The Turkish Navy went in there. The U.S. Navy won't go in there to rescue civilians. Now, don't even get me started on NASA. I spent a whole chapter on how Obama's destroying the U.S. military and NASA. You didn't believe me. The shuttle is over. We're going to have to buy seats on Russian shuttles to get up to the space station.
Savage.
Today in the Savage Nation, I want to talk about a man not talked about to any great extent in our history books, but he played an important role in our fight for independence from British rule. Long time ago, right? But this important patriot's name was Peter Francisco. We're joined now by Travis Bowman, whose book is entitled Hercules of the Revolution, who tells us about this great man. Travis Bowman, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, hi, Michael. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I truly appreciate and I'm honored to be here.
Why'd you write about this obscure figure, Peter Francisco?
Peter Francisco was called the Hercules of the Revolution because he was 6'6", 260 pounds when he enlisted with the Continental Army. He was only 16 years old, as many of the Continental Army guys were young teenagers. But he was enormous. I mean, I say he's kind of like the Shaquille O'Neal of the battlefields of the Revolution because he was a foot taller than the average man. The average man was only 5'6", and here he was 6'6". So that was unusually tall in his day. And he was so tall, matter of fact, he complained that the swords were just too small for him. And it took a few years, but George Washington finally had a 6-foot broadsword, 5-foot blade, 1-foot handle, made for him, specially made for him. And it was delivered to him just 2 days before a very critical battle, the Battle of Guilford Courthouse in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Hmm.
And he pulled that sword out swinging, and there's a monument that stands in honor of him at Guilford Courthouse National Military Park in honor of the 11 British that he killed that day. And that actually took place on March 15th.
Wow.
And March 15th is observed as Peter Francisco Day by three different states, and I'm working on the fourth one here in North Carolina. But Rhode Island and Massachusetts and Virginia, all three observed Peter Francisco Day because of what he accomplished in Greensboro, North Carolina on March 15, 1781. And that was a very critical battle. Only 7 months later, the British surrendered. We really pushed Cornwallis back, and so he essentially retreated to Yorktown, and of course that's where he surrendered that day.
Where did he come from?
Peter's life actually started very unusual. He originally was from the Azores Islands, and he was born into a wealthy family in the Azores Islands. His parents were nobility, and they had fled mainland Portugal to the Azores. And it was at the age of 5 he was kidnapped by pirates and never saw his parents or his sister again, as he recounted later on in life.
Oh, my God.
But 5 years old, here he's kidnapped by pirates and dropped off in the little town of City Point, Virginia, which is now Hopewell, Virginia. And there's a monument in honor of where he was found there in Hopewell, or City Point, Virginia. And it stands right in front of City Hall, matter of fact, and real nice monument. But anyway, here he was dropped off in this country. Nobody knew who his parents were. He was Portuguese. He was speaking Portuguese, and they didn't know what to do with him. So he ended up in the local orphanage. Was there that Patrick Henry's uncle, Judge Anthony Winston, actually came by the orphanage, paid some money, purchased him, brought him back, and put him to work on his plantation.
Really?
And that was very unusual in that time where, you know, he was didn't know who his parents were, and didn't have a family. So it wasn't unusual that he would have to somewhat work on a plantation. But I think that his dark, swarthy Mediterranean skin color probably played a role in that, and that he didn't fit in with the Winston, you know, white Anglo-Saxon family.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just fit in better, you know, clearly with the slaves. But, you know, amazingly enough, only God knew that this was going to be critical. Only God knew that he was going to be kidnapped by pirates and dropped off in this country. Only God knew that, you know, working on a plantation was just going to build his muscles. Only God knew that he was going to be a 6'6" giant, and that he would be so critical in actually two battles of the Revolution. That George Washington later said that without Peter, we would have lost two critical battles and possibly our freedom.
Unbelievable.
He was called the one-man army. That's what George Washington referred to him as, the one-man army. That's actually engraved on one of the monuments. There's five monuments in honor of Peter Francisco, but that is engraved on a plaque. George Washington's quote is engraved on a plaque up in Massachusetts, in New Bedford, Massachusetts.
And what was the man's inspiration?
Well, I think there's a combination here, that here he had been free. You know, he knew what it meant to be a free man, but when the Revolution began, so all that freedom was stripped from him by the pirates, of course, and here he is working on a plantation as a slave. And there's been debates whether or not he was an indentured servant or a slave, but in my opinion, you know, he didn't have it. An indentured servant would mean at the end of whatever, 5 or 10 years, his time was up and now he was free. But he didn't have any paperwork, technically, to say he was one or the other. So I would say he was more as a slave, because without any paperwork, he was going to be working on a plantation for Judge Winston for the rest of his life. But when the Revolution began, and Judge Winston was, his plantation, 2,600-acre plantation, he, of course, had Patrick Henry and George Washington, those in his home, to debate whether or not they should even stay loyal to the king. And so, you know, Peter was around those debates, and he heard those, but when the war began, to fight for his own freedom was certainly enticing to him, to be free again.
Sure.
But also for this new country that here he is in and doesn't have a clue where he was from, where he came from, and where his parents were. And so to fight, I think it was the combination of his own personal freedom, and it was the combination of, let's, you know, fight for this new country. Here I'm, you know, I don't know where my country is or, you know, what happened to it, but here I am in this new country, and to fight for that freedom. I think that resonated deep with inside of his soul.
And what injuries did he suffer fighting for a freedom?
That he was, matter of fact. He took several musket balls in the leg. Matter of fact, one, they just, instead of trying to fish around and dig it out, they left it, they sewed him up and left it in his leg for the rest of his life. He took at the Battle of Stony Point up in New Jersey, in New York, up on the Hudson River. He was actually select. George Washington handpicked him as 20 commandos, kind of like our Navy SEALs of today. And George Washington picked him as 20 guys. They went in the middle of the night to blaze through a swampy area, get through abatis, which are, you know, kind of like booby traps, trees cut down. Then they had to get up over a 300-foot rock face wall to get inside in the middle of the night and open up the doors so the Continental Army could come in. And the Stony Point was a fortress that the British would bring their armory, their gunpowder, and their cannons, and so on, and hold it as a staging place. So, here, you know, Peter was selected. Only three of those 20 commandos survived that engagement. 17 of them lost their lives. Peter himself took a 9-inch gash in his stomach at that battle. And he actually captured the Union Jack, the British flag, pulled it down off the flagpole, and it was there that he became known as the Hercules of the Revolution. This giant of a man helped us succeed in this battle that people thought was impossible for the Continental Army to take.
Oh, right.
And that was in 1779. So that was still, you know, it was kind of the middle of the Revolution. The war had been going on for several years at that point, but it was still a couple more years before the surrender. But he took a 9-inch gash in that engagement. Took him a while to heal up. But the battle of Guilford Courthouse that I was referring to, where he had the 6-foot broadsword that George Washington made for him, he took a bayonet in his knee, and it drove all the way up to his hip socket. And he was on horse in that battle, and he fell off his horse and was pretty much left for dead, essentially. It was a Quaker who picked him up after the battle and nursed him back to health in his home for a couple of months. But, It's amazing that, again, it was only God spared his life on numerous occasions to keep him alive through the whole, the whole war. And he was actually there at Yorktown. He was invited by General Lafayette, who was a good friend of his. General Lafayette asked him to come down, and he was there for the surrender.
Has he ever received any recognition?
Well, throughout history, like I mentioned, five monuments today stand in his honor. Three states observe Peter Francisco Day. He was put on a stamp, a bicentennial stamp. You'll see him in 1975 that was issued. So the U.S. Postal Service honored him and enshrined him on a stamp. So those are the things that you can see. But unfortunately, I think if you were to just walk around and ask the average American, who is Peter Francisco, 99.9% of Americans would have no clue because he's not talked about in our history books.
True.
He's not honored today. And it's sad. He was one of our great American heroes. He's been compared to William Wallace. He's been my book, actually, a best-selling author, Robert Whitlow. He's written numerous novels and produced a couple of films. But Robert Whitlow called my book The American Braveheart Story. And that is so true. William Wallace stood 6'6", just like Peter Francisco. William Wallace swung a 5.5-foot sword that's on display out in Scotland. And, William Wallace was fighting against, for freedom against the English Empire. And essentially, that's exactly what Peter Francisco was here in our country, the equivalent of the American Braveheart, William Wallace here within this country. And yet, most people don't know who he was, what he did, and I'm a descendant. I don't know if I mentioned that, but I'm a descendant of Peter Francisco, and that bugs me. I mean, I communicate with descendants of Peter Francisco all around the country, all the way from Alaska to Florida, all over. And obviously within the descendants of Peter, it bothers us that people don't know who he is and what he did and how he helped in many regards, almost single-handedly. Conquer in a couple of critical battles.
Why do you think we haven't heard about him?
Well, the reality is, if you look at the plaque at one of the monuments, the monument in Guilford Courthouse, the plaque says that he was likely the most famous private soldier of the Revolutionary War. So the reality is he was a private soldier. You got to remember, he was a slave, so he didn't learn to read or write like Americans do today. A child growing up in today's world, everybody has the opportunity to learn to read and write. So here, he doesn't know how to read or write. As he becomes famous in fighting, George Washington actually offered him a commission to become an officer, a lieutenant or a colonel, or move on up the ranks, but he had to turn it down because he couldn't read or write. So unfortunately, private soldiers are, of course, not talked about in our history books, and there's five monuments in his honor, but still, that doesn't put you in the history books. And so, sadly, I think it really, if you kind of go back in time, it really comes back to the simple fact that he was a slave. And because he was a slave, he couldn't read or write. And so when, in fact, he became famous, he couldn't become an officer. And had he been an officer, I think there would be some mentions of him in history books today.
Where can we read more?
Well, you can find my book on Amazon or, any of those, barnesandnoble.com, any of the ones that you typically buy books at. But certainly you can go to my website, herculesoftherevolution.com. I'm a descendant of Peter Francisco, stand 6'6", and I do impersonations, travel around the country doing book signings. And so you can find more information about that. But every book that's purchased from my website, I sign and send it to you. So it's a little bit different than what you'd get on Amazon.com. But certainly if you go to my website, I'll make sure you sign it, send it to you. And you can find out more information about where I'll be doing my impersonations and book signings around the country, too.
Travis Bowman, thanks for being on The Savage Nation.
You're certainly welcome.
This is The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Nation's urge to weigh Robin Hood tax to help the poor. Can you believe this? The imposter is at Indonesia, and some of the communists there and the so-called world leaders are saying that we should stabilize the global economy through a Robin Hood tax aimed at collecting money from rich nations to give to the poor. That's interesting, because Hillary's already given some of that Robin Hood money to the Palestinians. So they can be, I don't know, they could be happier. She just gave away how much? $150 million more. Play Hillary Clinton again. I want to get my numbers right.
The United States and our international partners are committed to supporting the Palestinian Authority as it works to overcome these challenges. So today, I am pleased to announce that the United States has transferred an additional $150 million in direct assistance to the Palestinian Authority. This brings our direct budget assistance to a total of $225 million for the year, and our overall support and investment to nearly $600 million this year.
That's the new game. So that's the new game in town. They rob you, and they call it an investment. Now, at the risk of your displeasure, the Savage Manifesto in Trickle-Up Poverty, which is not to be dismissed, in fact, it should be studied, has 37 points. I'm actually looking to see if it includes ending foreign aid. I don't know. I must have missed that. I don't see it. I don't see that one. How did I miss that one? Keep the estate tax zero, say no to the VAT tax, reduce pay and pensions for civil servants, defend the Defense of Marriage Act, encourage childbearing among taxpaying citizens, make abortions illegal, end affirmative action, limit welfare benefits, voting reform, boot the czars, put the brakes on GM, reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act, reinstate the Wall Street uptick rule, privatize the regulation of Wall Street, encourage risk-taking and entrepreneurship, institute tort reform, run the country like a business, not an empire. I apologize. I should have been number 38. Eliminate all foreign aid. Immediately. We can't afford it. We're a basket case. In fact, we need foreign aid from China, the country that's robbed us blind owing to the traitors inside our own government. Shall I repeat that in case you missed it? Owing to the traitors inside our own government. You want me to name a few of them? You want me to name some of the law firms that led the charge of China into America, that reversed the course of this great nation? Shall we start? Let me start with some of the more prominent names of people who are consultants to China for the last number of years, who are former governmental officials, who make certain that China gets her way in our halls of Congress. Let us start with Madeleine Albright. Then let's go to Sandy Berger, Dr. Sox. Remember Dr. Berger, the man who stole very, very top secret documents that were found in his underwear? The former national security advisor? A low-life lawyer from the firm of Hogan & Hartson in Washington, D.C. Hogan & Hartson, one of the principal vehicles for the China trade, sent their man into the national security position to make certain that China got her way in this country. You want investigations? You want to go back a little further? There's a lot of people who know how far back you have to go. I'll go back a little further. Let us go back to Bill Clinton himself, who had a little relationship with the chairman of the Democrat National Committee. I think his name was Schwartz or Shapiro. Does anyone know his name, exactly his name? A gentleman who created Loral Space and Technology. A man who had started with a parking meter company in the Bronx and then built it into a space and technology company and then used government military technology to launch rockets in order to launch satellites into the sky. And he did so in China because it was cheaper to launch the rockets out of China. And in doing so, he shared military technology with the Chinese. And we were told then, because I was a talk show host then, that they would never use this technology for the military. Oh, no. You know they wouldn't do a thing like that. After all, we were told by Schwartz, or was it Shapiro, who said they would never do that. Where is old Schwartz or Shapiro today? Where is he? Is he anywhere near Madoff? Does he have anything to do with Madoff? I doubt it. But we know Madoff is in jail for having bilked tens of thousands of people of their life savings. But what about the individuals who have bilked us of our national pride? What about the people who have bilked us of our national security? What about the people who have bilked us of our national identity? Shouldn't they be sharing a cell in the same prison with Mr. Madoff? Aren't those crimes just as bad? Some would ask, I think. Yes, I think so. But The chance of it happening is nil, less than nil, less than zero. So let's, we the little people, think about what's going on, man. Identified as the trail of a missile fired either from a surface ship or a submarine, the U.S. Pentagon says we don't know what it is, but it's definitely not from a ship. But you little people now go into your UFO fantasy. Now go into your little late-night radio shows and start talking about UFOs. That's where we want you to go with it. Just be a useful moron. Go on late-night radio and talk about it was a UFO and little men and little green men came down off the coast of California and blah, blah, blah. That'll put them to sleep again. Blah, blah, blah. So we can make certain that the military is safe for diversity.
Savage.